Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Well, I've got a guest with me today. Let's see if you go and pop your headphones on over your baseball cap. That's why we put big ones. please welcome to the show Leroy Logan, ex-police superintendent from the Metropolitan Police. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. I very rarely get guests in. I normally get them on the phone.
Oh, well, I thought to myself, the personal touch always helps.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. So how long were you superintendent for?
9 years.
Wow.
In fact, it was my last rank before I retired in 2013.
So what would have been the next rank if you'd have stayed?
Chief superintendent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So,
but what really sort of convinced me to leave after 30 years was I was one of the superintendents on the Olympic policing coordination team. Say that when you had a few. Anyway, basically, we did the security and safety for the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
So that was such a...
That was no mean feat, that was, wasn't it?
Well, exactly. And it was successful in terms of everyone had a great time. Team GB got many gold medals.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that we weren't conspicuous by having to step in and do anything was a great success. And it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I thought, well, really, leave on a high.
Why not? Yeah, so you left in 2013 then.
Yep.
That's good. And what else have you done within the police then? Were you a beat copper to start with, or were you one of these guys, I hate to say this, that came in and got fast-tracked up to a certain position?
No, I did my probation.
You did everything, did you?
Hitting the streets 2 years, and then... You know, I wasn't on a fast track process. Took promotion after a few years, and then sort of went through a few more other ranks.
Yeah,
but I was mainly a community cop. I did some undercover stuff as well.
Oh wow!
You know, sort of Miami Vice type stuff. without the weather,
without the weather, and those flash suits.
Yeah, that's right. And I was the, is it Tubbs? It was the,
yeah,
with the curly perm type thing.
That's him.
Yeah. So I went through that phase. But yeah, I really like being part of the community. And even my last borough, which is Hackney, where I spent a third of my service as a sergeant for 6 years, and then as a superintendent for a follow-up 4 years. It was really just for me an excellent opportunity to work with the community and doing youth intervention and prevention programs. And I still run a charity that started in West London, but we spread it out to all of London, and Hackney was one of them. And it's called Void Youth. It stands for Voice of the Youth and Genuine Empowerment.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we deliver educational programs for year 9 students.
Wow. Who,
and to know their rights and responsibilities.
Yeah, that's good. And it's good you're still keeping it up.
Yeah, I'm still the chair and still delivering the programs. And we've diversified to have quite a few programs.
Yeah.
And one of our patrons is Lee John, my old schoolmate.
You went to school with Lee?
Yeah, I went to school.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I know Lee, he's lovely.
Yeah, he's. Yeah, well, you used to hear him before you see him, you know, with his beatbox or whatever he's called.
But he does love to sing.
Oh, that's what I mean. He'd be screaming to his ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
And you could hear him down. We all grew up in Islington, Finsbury Park, and you could hear him at one end of the tunnel bellowing. And you think to yourself, who is that? And when he came back from the States when he was 16.
Yeah.
This strong American accent. Hi, how are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, from New York.
He adopted it, did he?
Well, he'd grown up there for the best part of 6 or 7 years, so you can't blame him.
Oh, no.
But he used to really lay it on the strong, you know. And in those days, it was flares and afros and all that sort of thing. So, you know, he came in like a whirlwind of creativity and crescendo and colour and music.
he's always been one, though, to speak his mind, though, isn't he?
Yes, he's very outspoken. I tell him about it all the time. And I suppose he's... his expression is through his songs.
Yeah.
His amazing wealth of songs, you know. And he's still trooping, you know, stands...
Oh, no, yeah.
Still going... I mean, 35 years plus... Living out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how he does it. And he's, you know, it's not like you and me all have to just have our clothes for the day or the evening. He has to do his stage gear and his promotion gear. The size of it, oh, it's amazing.
I know. I worked with him. When I say I worked with him, he was a guest at a gig I did many years ago. My friend Howard got this gig, and I went along to do karaoke. My friend Howard DJed and I karaoke'd.
Yeah.
And I dragged Lee up to do one of his songs, and the words were wrong.
Oh, brilliant.
And he's singing away and he's looking at the way he went, just stop singing. These words are wrong. Why have they got these words? Don't they know how to listen to my song?
Oh, brilliant.
Bless his cotton socks.
Yeah.
So you must have seen lots of stuff then in your time as superintendent.
Oh yeah,
for Hackney. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I take it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, I knew Islington, where it was my first nick, and I grew up there.
Yeah.
So I knew Islington was pretty tough at the best of times, but Hackney, wow. I mean, it was non-stop. And in those days, like when I was a sergeant in the 90s, you know, it was shebeens and people falling out of all sorts of illegal gambling joints and everything like that. You know, it was different to Islington. And even as a superintendent, it had its moments, but we really sort of shaped it up, you know, and now it's a well-to-do area.
Very affluent.
With Shoreditch, where the Voyage charity is based, you know, it's lovely around Hoxton and all those areas.
So. Oh, even Commercial Street is now complete. It's all food and everything around there now.
Yeah, I remember Commercial Street. You went down there if you knew someone.
Yeah.
And you went in and out quickly, you know.
Well, my family's, I still had family in off of Petticoat Lane.
Oh, yeah.
Off of Old Castle Street. There was a place called Denning Point.
Right, I've heard of it.
It's right up near the traffic lights where it meets up with, I can't remember the name of the road. Anyway, Whitechapel Road, where it meets up there.
Yeah.
And there were drug dealers in my aunt's flats. I had an aunt on the 19th floor and I had an aunt on the 9th floor. And I remember one day I went to get out of the lift on the 9th floor, and I'd been up to my aunt's, and this guy with an Alsatian on a lead and a vicious one of that, as I've gone to walk, he's lunged at me and I've put my arm up and he's taken a chunk out of my arm.
No.
Yeah.
He
soon got in the lift and disappeared.
Right.
And when you looked at his door, and a lot of the doors, it was all reinforced steel. Drunk then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember when I was a PC at Islington, we did a joint operation with Holborn Police Station, and I think I recall, it's just off Rosebery Avenue, and it was called Rosebery House or something.
Yeah.
But it was absolute a drug den, and I was the one as decoy, going buy some cannabis and stuff. And I went in.
Were you baby faced then? Is that what they said?
Well, I was. Yeah. Not this grey haired old funny.
Not the experience look you've got these days. But
voice of wisdom, you know, the face of being craggy and old. Anyway, so baby faced me, knocked on the door, said I've come for some cannabis and everything. Yeah. Oh, best Jamaican accent. respect. Yeah, roots, aye.
And I walked
in. Yeah, and I said, come in. And with that, they slammed the door behind me. I was trapped.
Oh.
And there was, all of a sudden, I saw this really large Rastafarian guy. He must be about 6'6".
Rastafarian guys are really large. they are, no matter any Rastafarian guy you see is always over 6'2".
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one was well over that. And he was like, it was the cry of the banshees. He had this cutlass coming at me. I kid you not. Anyway, I don't know how I got out of place. All I remember was I screamed, you know, on the radio, help, help. And then one of the team, his name is Stumpy Stevens. I can't remember his first name. He was a prop, you know, rugby prop.
Yeah.
So he's real squat and powerful. And he came through they reinforced this door with all metal everything, but they left glass at the top of it.
Oh.
And he went through that like, I don't know, like kamikaze, rolled out into the corridor, and we were all tussling. My God. Till his day, I don't know, got out.
Did you get the nick, though?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
But they flushed a lot of it down the loos, but we were already sieving it out of the sewage. And I remember going to court and they said, "Officer, how did you secure so much drugs?" And I was like, "Well, we had two deployed in the sewage system, Your Worship."
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you've written a book, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, are these kind of stories what's in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the book called?
It's called Closing Ranks.
Right.
My Life as a Cop.
And how long has it taken to write?
It's been my labour of love for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's sort of, I thought, yes, I will, no, I won't. And I talked myself out of it quite a few times.
Yeah.
And in the end, publisher, Alison Hull, if you're listening, she sort of was nagging me and she said, "No, you've got to write this book. We'd love to hear your stories. You're a very interesting guy." I said, "You must be really boring. You don't get out much." And, you know, she talked me through it. And then I must admit, my attention span ain't that great. So I said, "I need someone to work with me." So they got me.
You know what? I'm like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I must admit, I get distracted easily. I shouldn't. But anyway, as I'm getting older, I'm getting easily distracted and make, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, "No, I need a ghostwriter," and I got one. George Luke, if you're listening, he's a Kent young man.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. He said to me, "We can do this," and we did it. And the rest is history, and hopefully all being well, April the 16th, the book comes out.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk a bit more. I've got the news coming up in a minute. I'm going to play a song. Let's have a look, see if this works. It should
Future.
Work. This is Your Mate Lee John with you on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Take care of your
community. You might see me with my little hat.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Actually, talking about reggae and that Police and Thieves track you played just before the break, I must admit, that was one of my first reggae records I bought by Junior Mervyn in the 70s, early 70s. And in fact, it was one of the biggest influences on me becoming a cop. It was either become a cop
or a thief.
Or a thief. And that's why when you suggested that I was stealing your biscuits, you should, mate, I was acquiring them lawfully.
I offered them, you take them. They're to be taken.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got that face, though. You couldn't have a face of a thief. That you haven't got a hardened criminal face. I've got to be honest with you.
That's why I realised, no. drug dealer wasn't for me or anything else. Because unfortunately, growing up in Islington in those days, pretty hardened.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, a few people were into those sort of things. But I had some very strong parents. My dad, listen, I was more scared of him than the old Bill.
Was he the man with the belt, was he?
Well, as they say, spare the rod and spoil the child.
What about your mum? Was she a force to be reckoned with as well?
Quiet force. If you upset mum, just run. She ain't going to bring no rod.
Could she aim a slipper well?
Slipper, plate, pan, everything.
Oh, my mum was like that, bless her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Didn't mess around with her.
No.
But at the same time, she'll kill you with kindness. You know?
Of course. That's just it. The love was always there, but you did something wrong. Oh, dear. So, you've been a police superintendent, you've been a sergeant, you've come up through the ranks within the police. Did you enjoy being a policeman? Was it something you thought, I'm going to enjoy this? Or what actually, I know you said Junior Mervyn sort of got you, I'm going to either be a police or a thief.
Yeah.
But what made you have a passion for being
a
police?
Well, I mean, it was a real calling. And a lot of people say, what's that, schizophrenia or something? I said, no.
I'm hearing voice.
That inner voice, you know. And how I was actually in uni, and I was running from one block to another. I used to go to, it was North East London Polytechnic in those days.
NELP.
And I'm running along Water Lane, and I saw this black cop just sitting in a car.
Oh, wow.
In white shirt, and he looked real. And he didn't say anything. He didn't look up at me. I just looked at him. He just stopped me in my tracks. Thought, that is a brave guy. And then I rushed to my next lesson.
What were you studying at the time?
Pharmacology.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So you were going to be making the stuff.
easy. I won't say I'd be making anything illegal. No man-made substances for me. No, I was doing clinical trials.
Right.
So I majored in pharmacology at NELP, and I then went to the Royal Free Hospital.
Okay.
And I did 4 years of research there.
Yeah.
to about 83. And but while I was at the Royal Free, we used to have quite a very, very high level sports centre, basketball, football, swimming pool, gym, the lot. And I in the bar afterwards, you meet all sorts of people, not necessarily from the hospital staff, but elsewhere. And then I got talking with these guys, and they said they were cops from Hampstead Police Station.
Oh.
So I said, oh, interesting. So I got to see the human side of them.
Black or white guys?
Both.
Oh, right.
Black and white. And I thought, actually, you know, good on you. And then that image of that young man in that car when I was at uni, I thought, wow, you know, that's pretty hot. And then my boss was giving me an appraisal. And he said, listen, Leroy, I can't see you being a cop for the next... Sorry, cop. A research scientist for the next 30 years. So I said, what do you think I should do? And he said, I think your character suits being a cop. And I said, do I look like someone who's, you know, into power trips and and truncheons? And,
In below the belly, no one will see it.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
in the kidneys.
No. In those days, they used to have these truncheons made out of, I don't know what, this black ebony wood.
Yeah.
The thing was like lead.
Pre-nightstick, proper truncheon. Yeah.
I mean, if you were a seasoned cop, you'd have one of them. You'd get it passed on, you know, like parcel on the baton. Yeah, anyway. So I couldn't get it out of my mind. My cop said, and I went... I was engaged at the time. She's still my current wife.
Yeah.
Bless her. Known her for 42 years. Gretel, if you're listening.
Got to give her a mention.
Yeah. And the grandchildren, Naraya, Judah, and Tegan. I won't bother about the children.
You got grandchildren. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm born in 57, so do your maths. 63. I'm a 50s baby. I'm a boomer.
Oh, wow. I thought you were about 2 years older than me. Maybe if that, it may be a year younger than me, and I'm 53.
Yeah, no, it's the baseball cap. It's the baseball cap. That's why I keep it on. It's amazing, especially when you're trying to get in anywhere and he's trying to look hard. I remember I was going to a function quite recently, and I had my baseball cap on me and my body warmer and everything. And my nephew came up to me and said, Uncle, you look like you're going to war. I said, yeah, I'm ready. I'm an urban soldier, you know.
So anyway, back on track.
Back on track. So basically, Gretel said, do you know, I agree with Roy. You should join the police. And then what made it even worse was they took me on a ride round, the cops. And I thought, this is really cool. And I thought, actually, and they convinced me to put in an application. But it was going through so fast. I thought, whoa, let's time out on this one. give me 6 months to think about it. Because it was a big sort of recruitment campaign for...
Black police officers weren't many back then, were they?
Exactly. And this was they were really targeting on black recruits. So... And then while I'm waiting, I thought I'd delay it till... So this was like late summer of 82. I said, let me wait for 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
So it's now going into 83. Just before the new year, my father was beaten up by police officers.
Wow.
On a traffic matter.
No.
So you can imagine I was not very pleased because, all right, he was 50-odd, 58 I think he was. So he's not like a ruffian, you know, and it was a traffic matter. Anyway, he successfully sued them for unlawful arrest and excessive force and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I knew he wouldn't be very happy if I joined. And you can imagine when he found out.
He hit the roof.
the moon.
Took off like a rocket, didn't he?
I'll tell you. He's still heading out, you know. Well, he's passed on now, so he's definitely out there.
Yeah.
So everyone thought, are you crazy? You still want to join the cops? And your dad's been beaten up by them? Anyway, if you want to reduce your Christmas card list by 99%,
join the police. Cops. Yeah.
I used to get some threats. You come near me, mate, are you going to get this and that? Oh. Are you serious? Anyway, fortunately, I was in my mid-20s by then, and I thought, well, listen, I was married as well. I got married in 83.
Did you go to Hendon, did you?
Oh, yeah. But the great thing was, even though Hendon, the food was rubbish, and, you know, it was a militaristic culture, definitely compared to science research in the Royal Free and Hampstead. But fortunately, I had a little oasis, and that oasis was Lee's house on the other side of Hendon Way, 5 minutes walk. from...
It's good to have friends, yeah.
It was brilliant. So I'd go over there, and everyone would go up to the bloody Greyhound pub. I'd pile into Lee's house, have champagne cocktails. And
that's because you had imagination.
Hey, boom, 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 ching. We should be a double act together.
We should, too, yeah. Yeah. You feed them, I'll knock them down.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And no, I must admit, that's what... I think that made me survive Hendon, was wow. having Lee on the other end of a 5-minute walk from yeah. Hendon Training School. He's brilliant.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
So, and he likes to cook as well, so you make this feast for me. Oh, yeah.
What's his address? I'll put round.
Oh, I can't tell you that.
Not on air.
All right, okay, I'll tell you later.
So you then come up through the ranks. You get yourself to superintendent of the Metropolitan Police. You get involved with the Olympics and the security for all that. And is that what got you your MBE?
No, actually, my MBE came from Jack Straw himself when he was Home Secretary.
Oh, really?
Because I did a lot of work with him around this Stephen Lawrence inquiry, you know, yeah. the McPherson inquiry.
Yeah.
And because I was chair of the Black Police Association at the time.
I remember, I read that up.
Yeah. I'm the first national chair of the BPA.
Wow.
And even though a lot of people thought, well, we don't need something like that, but because of the issues that was being raised, not only internally around diversity and equality, especially around race issues, but also on service delivery like stop and search
yeah.
and all these sort of death in police custodies, all these sort of things. So I'd worked with Jack Straw, especially with the Stephen Lawrence recommendations and, you know, shared panels with him and stuff like that. And it came totally out of the blue. It was in the New Year's Honours list of January 2000. So it's a great start to the millennium.
It was well before all that was thought of. And what were you at the time?
I was a mere inspector.
That's nice.
No, it was actually. It was a great start to millennium, you know, first day of 2000. you know, it could only go down from there. And it was a tough time, but we saw some breakthroughs, you know. And I think the police is in a better place than it was when I joined in the early 80s.
You think so? Is it better managed now?
No, well, I think it's obviously a lot more sophisticated how it works, but the real impact on the Met has been austerity, just like the other force areas.
And that impacts it on everything.
Oh, and now you've got a lack of capacity, and you know the police, unfortunately, are more like firefighters reacting from one incident to another.
Yeah,
you know, because I remember when I was in Hackney, my partnership teams, every safer neighbourhood team that I was the in charge of, had one sergeant, two constables, and three PCSOs. And they were ring-fenced that ward. So they built up relationships with the wider community, with young people, early intervention, prevention programs, and working with youth services, you know. So youth workers were like gold dust. They're like problem solvers. They were the bridge between the police and the youngsters. So, you know, there was, for me, you had a clear idea of what was going on much earlier than when the beef's gone totally wrong and everyone's stabbing and shooting each other.
Yeah, that's much better.
And drug dealing, you know, as I said, in the 90s, it was like the Wild Wild West in Hackney. But when we really started to work with the community, they were telling us all the information we need, so we'd shut down a lot of the shebeens, the drug suppliers, you know, the ones going around steaming on their motorbikes, all this sort of stuff. We were a lot more proactive. We kept them on the run, and that's how it should be. Unfortunately, at the moment, it's all reversed.
Yeah, you know, you've got this. It was County Lines thing going on?
Yeah, well, County Lines been going around for about 20 years, but it's been allowed to escalate. Escalate because less cops to deal with it. It's, you know, it's not, you know, it takes a long time. It took me 6 months to deal with the top gangs, you know, not just the CCTV and the DNA and the surveillance stuff that goes with it, but, you know, to make sure that they can't wriggle off the hook because they've got a smart lawyer. Now, you won't see that amount of time for a drug deal.
Right.
Or deal with a drug supplying gang. So it's, fortunately, the thin blue line is basically getting thinner and thinner, you know?
So do you reckon Boris will do his best to get the policing back to where he wants it, get the bobbies back out on the beat and stuff?
Well, I hope he does, because he presided over a lot of this in the Met when he was Mayor of London.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's he's got to deal with it.
He believes in the police, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, he does. But unfortunately, he allowed a lot of the austerity strategy to really hit the Met in a way that I think in a lot of ways it's going to take more than just 3 years to get those officers back, because a lot of them are leaving as well. You know, they're not just staying because they change the paying conditions, the pensions. You pay more, get less, and you get taxed at the end of it.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, and they change all the rules on so many different things. I must admit, if I was considering the Met now, knowing what I knew in the early 80s, I don't think I would really join.
No.
Because, you know, it's not the nature of the work, it's just the way in which they value. And that's why people have been sort of voting with their feet. I mean, there's like 700 less detectives Met-wide now.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they've reduced not only thousands of police officers, so about 4,000 police officers just in London alone, but it's the police staff members, all the backup staff.
Yeah.
So I used to have analysts when I was in Hackney. I'd have sort of 30 analysts just in one big room, and that was just the borough of Hackney. Now they've got less than half of that for three boroughs. It's crazy.
That is mad. So you pleased you got out when you did then?
Well, you know, I'm still involved in public service, all right, from the charity sector point of view.
But are you pleased you got out a bit being, because you would have been one of the people, would you have been one of the people held accountable for things when it goes wrong because you haven't got the manpower to do what you need to do?
Yeah, and it's a thankless task. And I know a lot of senior officers, well, all officers actually, but even more so when you got so much more responsibility, are suffering from trauma and mental health issues. You know, it's massive. So, yeah, I must admit, just for my peace of mind, you know, because you join to be a public servant and do the best you can and have opportunities to do so. Now, it's stacked against you.
Right, it's just a job, is it?
A lot of people are seeing it more like, well, you know, I clock on and off and do my bit and, you know, try and forget what I've just gone through because I've just been run ragged throughout that time.
I've got a mate who's a policeman. He's a wicked guitarist, brilliant guitarist. He's 6'3".
Oh, wow, okay.
You wouldn't want to argue with him.
No.
But he's, what they call him, he shifts schedules, you know, and he gets pulled in for, I mean, when Trump came over, you know, he got pulled in just to stand around.
Yeah, I know, and that's the thing.
And you think, what am I doing here?
And that's the thing. You used to be able to, you know, we had capacity for officers like they'll have their downtime, like their spare week, and they would be called on to do those sort of things. You know, you very rarely you take people off the response teams or the safer neighbour teams or anyone else. Now, because they're literally run ragged, thin number of officers responding to the calls, and then they still take them off to go and deal with any public order event or, you know, iconic individuals visiting or Extinction Rebellion, all these sort of things, just take people away from where they should be, building links with the community.
That took a lot of police resources, that
Extinction Rebellion.
Which I personally think was wrong. But, you know, people need the police in the areas they need the police in. Don't pull them off for something.
Absolutely. And I must admit, you know, I'd like to think they're going to change their tactics because, you know, certain areas crime went up because everyone, you know, those criminal-minded people thought, hold on here, they're all uptown, we might as well help ourselves, you know?
Yeah, that is it. So, let's cut this short because I know you've got other things to do.
Yep.
You're busy, busy man.
Like find my way back to Woodford.
That's easy. It's called a sat-nav.
What, it's a sat-nav that got me lost in the first place?
No, just click home. It always works.
All right, okay, cool.
Your book's coming. Your book is out now?
No, on the 16th of April.
The 16th of April, your book's coming out.
Yep.
Will it be available Kindle-wise and all that? All platforms?
All platforms.
Hardback, softback.
And it's hardback initially and then softback.
Paperback,
as they say, in September.
Right.
And actually, just to say, it ties in with a film that I'm involved in. Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave, got an Oscar 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He's doing a series.
That was a long-ass film, that was.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
Oh, no. Very good.
I haven't finished watching that yet.
Really?
I started it 2 years ago. Yeah.
It's worth seeing the end, trust me. Just to see a happy ending.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's doing a series of six independent episodes of London in the 60s to 80s.
Oh, wow.
And one of the stories is about a police officer.
Yeah.
And guess who's the police officer?
You.
Ding-ding.
No.
Give the man a cigar. Have a biscuit.
Oh, thanks very much.
You deserve
I'm pleased
that.
I bought them.
Exactly. I'm very generous with other people's biscuits. Anyway, so that's coming out in September.
Is it going to be a cinema thing or is it going to be...
No, it's just on BBC One.
Oh, BBC
so
One.
So six different episodes. They're not connected, but there's different parts of London across the 60s, 70s and 80s. And in fact, they're using my name. So I've got John Boyega playing me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Oh, so you're not in it yourself?
No. My acting ain't that great. Not that great. But no, so Lee John is get someone else playing him.
Oh, awesome.
And his mum. All the people that really, really featured in my
in
life,
your life
most times. So, yeah.
See,
so
if this was 30-odd years ago, you know, you'd have to find someone to play me. Who would they get to play me? I don't know.
As long as it's not Idris Elba, that's all I can say.
I don't know. He does. He played a good cop. I thought I enjoyed his.
What Luther?
I enjoyed Luther.
He was crazy. That's the thing that I couldn't stand. He was unruly. He's insubordinate. He was in domestic violence.
But that's what you. That's
that's not.
That's what you want to watch. It's escapism.
Not at all. It's
all right.
Not
so
that.
So before you go, then.
Yep.
Of all the cop shows on the telly at the moment, what would you say is the closest to how the police work these days, or how you would work as a police officer?
Oh, now
Line of Duty.
Yeah, Line of Duty is pretty close.
Yeah. Marcella.
No. I'll tell you, it's not on anymore. But The Bill. I thought The Bill was really good.
I love The Bill.
And in fact, we used to do some advice for The Bill.
I love The Bill in its early stage. When the later years, it lost. I thought it lost its way a bit.
Yeah. But I thought The Bill was the most authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but what about modern now? Apart from Line of Duty. Everybody loves Line of Duty.
Yeah,
it's great. I mean, you've got stuff like Vera. Okay, Marcella.
Middling.
Yeah. What about Silent Witness?
Silent Witness, pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a great sort of.
That's more from the pathology side, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why I joined the Met. I actually wanted to be
a pathologist.
Socco. Yeah. But I used to call him. A lab sergeant.
Right.
And it was a detective sergeant, and they would go in. It's like the CSI type thing. You'd go in and, they're there, and freeze the scene and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then about a year and a half into the Met, so it was like 84, going on to 85, they civilianised the role. I was so gutted.
I bet you were.
And that was the end of my CID career, basically. I thought, I'll just stay in uniform. I need the money.
Well, listen, it's been great talking to you, Lee. It really has. You've been a wonderful guest. Thanks for coming in. Good luck with the book.
I will hopefully come back and I'll tell you all about the three sales I've had, including you.
I don't pay for anything. I'm a radio presenter.
Well, I'll present you with a bill.
Oh, dear. The old bill presented me with the new bill. That'd be good.
That's a spin.
Darren Mutu, our reggae guy, says hello.
Oh, well done, Darren. You recognise me.
Yeah.
I'll be tuning in on a Wednesday.
He does a comedy night. He's doing a comedy night in a couple of weeks as well. He runs it at Cricket Club in Billericay.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we've got some good acts on there.
Send me the link. Is it on Facebook?
Yes, on Facebook. I'll send you the link anyway.
Send me the link, man.
But thank you for coming. It's been wonderful to talk to you. It's so nice to have a guest.
I know. Well, they said to me, you can do it online. I said, no. I'll make the effort and get lost in the wilds of Brentwood.
Get lost in Brentwood, yeah. So Darren said, could you play Dennis Bovell Running Away?
Yeah.
Did you say you knew Dennis?
I know Dennis because he's a good friend of Lee's.
Yeah.
Janet Kay and Carol Thompson. I'm blessed to know them as well.
I'm so jealous. You and I got to become close friends.
Yeah.
You really
better late than never.
always.
Always.
Have a safe trip back. Take care.
Thank you very much. It's been great.